Welcome. You're listening to the Mac Observer's Background Mode. This is your host, John Martellaro, and this week my guest is Serenity Caldwell, the managing editor of iMore. Serenity, good afternoon.
Hello. Good to talk with you, John.
It's nice to have you on the show. Thank you.
Absolutely. Glad to be here.
So you are managing editor of iMore. I want to hear more about that, and then I want to go backwards in time in a bit. But first, tell the listeners about iMore, what you do and what your focus there is.
Awesome. Well, iMore is an Apple and expanded universe type site, hence iMore. We focus both on Apple's core products as well as help how-tos and analysis of the greater Apple ecosystem and ecosphere, including products like Fitbit and great apps and great accessories. I've got a little iPhone connected BB-8 on my desk right now that I got to recently review, which is pretty great. My role at iMore is essentially helping site editor Renee Ritchie build and manage the content for the week. So basically planning what we're going to publish and writing quite a great deal of analysis, how-tos, and interesting pieces that pop up on my desk.
Do you do any product reviews?
I do. I actually just I wrote a review of Apple's Modern Buckle this last Friday. Today, I'm not sure when this podcast goes live. So Friday, February 12th, I wrote a review of Apple's Modern Buckle for Apple Watch. And I also done reviews of things like the BB-8. I wrote our review of the iPhone 6S. And I'm in the progress on working on an Apple TV review many months later with the newest software update release.
You mentioned the BB-8. It makes me think that it's a wonderful time because when our site first started, it was strictly Macintosh, mm-hmm. Mac Observer. And as time has gone along, Apple has grown. And as Apple has grown, it has acquired more and more competitors. And so more and more things are on our plate, and there's more things to write about.
So much.
Yes, it's hard to keep up.
It is. And in fact, we just hired some new folks at iMore and rearranged some of the way that we're doing content in hopes of not necessarily keeping up, because I feel like trying to write about everything that's in the Apple ecosystem, including the App Store, is too much. There's so many good apps and so many interesting things out there right now that I really believe that our job in sort of the Mac tech news world is to focus on the stuff that's really exceptional and promote the things that we think that other people might really get a kick out of or really be more interested in finding out about.
That stands out on your website because I'm looking at the purple banner underneath the main graphic. Mm-hmm. And you've got these little buttons, iPhone 6S, iPad Pro, Apple TV. Those are the hot buttons.
Yeah, those are actually, they change. Those are the tags that people are searching for right now.
I remember when I was at Apple, it was a tough time getting our science team onto the top of the Apple tabs.
Oh, yeah.
It's fighting top for news. Space up there, yeah. And other things always seem to be more important mm-hmm. than science. That was my role, and I kind of lament that Apple has kind of fallen out of that. Have you thought about that in your position, about Apple's seemingly reduced emphasis on science?
In terms of their specific products or in terms of just their focus on science technology?
All around, because, first they canceled the XServe. Mm-hmm. And the Mac Pro seems to be kind of languishing. One of my earlier shows was with an astrophysicist who uses his Mac 2013 Mac Pro to do gravitational research.
Oh, fat. Really, very, very timely considering the recent announcements.
Yeah. He was sending me some tips about that event. Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. I think that the Mac Pro is an interesting conundrum for Apple because it's definitely, I don't think they don't care about the Mac Pro because they wouldn't have put all of this effort into redesigning it and updating it if they just kind of wanted it to live on the shelf as a, for the small 0.1% of people who really need the power of the Mac Pro. I'm actually really impressed with the new Mac Pro, even though it doesn't necessarily have some of the expandability that its previous predecessors had. But I think the real thing about Mac Pros in particular is that they keep their age very well. They keep their technology very well, so that someone can work on a 2013, you know, Mac Pro. And I know a game developer who still works on a 2008 Mac Pro, because they just don't see the need to update or upgrade because they have the technology that they do. That said, I don't think that the product, the ramp, sort of let's release a new Mac Pro every 2-3 years. I wouldn't mind that being a little bit more accelerated. I do think that Apple cares a lot about science, both science, the supporting science technology folks out in the ecosystem, and also their internal R&D team. Because they do, I mean, you think about all of the stuff that was covered on the Apple Watch last year, when they spent detailed videos talking about how they built the molds for the various watches and why they were using sapphire instead of Ion-X glass for the higher end models, and so much on each of the individual bands, how the iPhone 6S is built, how the Apple Pencil came to be. I think internally, R&D is a really important part of Apple culture. We just don't hear about it as often. Externally, when we're talking about pro workers in general, we hear a lot less about pro artists who are using Final Cut, or pro, you know, scientists who are using a Mac to discover gravitational holes. Partially, I think it's just that Apple's focus on promoting has changed. You know, it used to be, oh, we have to go after the pro market because the pro market is what's going to pay our bills. And now very much, I think Apple's major, you know, income resources comes from the consumer market, comes from people who have maybe always used a Windows PC and are switching. And the, you know, the loyal Mac users and the beginning iPhone users and iPod users are still there. They make such a small percentage of the overall population that when Apple's making videos about the people who use its software and its hardware as a selling point, they're making it geared towards the largest amount of people who are going to buy. I don't think that means that they don't care about the pro market or the creative market, the science technology market. It's just that makes up such a small percentage that we just don't see as much advertising towards that market as we used to.
We did see a little bit of it when the iPad Pro came out, and we saw those images of Jupiter and Pluto.
I love the commercial of the woman who's charting the stars using Starwalk and a couple of other programs, and using her Apple Pencil to write down coordinates and astronomy information. I love that concept. And I do think, again, I don't think that Apple's products have been dumbed down, or that Apple doesn't make products for professional researchers. I love my iPad Pro as a very professional level.
I want to talk to you more about that in the second half of the show.
Definitely.
By the way, I'm talking to you on a 2013 Mac Pro.
There you go.
And I love it.
Oldie but a goodie. Yeah.
It has been a workhorse. It's fast. I never see a spinning cursor, hardly ever, except when I launch iTunes.
iTunes is a different story.
That's right. So, I kind of feel like you do about the Mac Pro. I mean, Apple did put a lot of energy into it. Phil Schiller came out on stage when it was announced at WWDC 2013 and was very proud of
Apple's
efforts.
Not innovating my ass.
That's right.
Yeah, I think that Apple does care very deeply about the pro market, and does want to make professional users happy. They are increasingly juggling balls is the problem. They have so many spinning plates, and so many potential avenues that they want to explore, that I think that it's not that the pro market gets shafted per se, but that it's not as much of a monetary commitment. I think it looks like Apple's taking a back burner, when in fact there are still teams that are hard at work on the pro level pieces of software. I mean, the iPad Pro and the Pencil would have never gotten created if there wasn't, you know, someone passionately at Apple saying artists need a great pressure sensitive tool, and the third party styluses are just not cutting it.
Right. Well, obviously, you are a very technical person, and because background mode is quasi-biographical, I wanted to go back in time a little bit and ask you about your growing up and your career development, because I think the listeners would be curious to hear about how, you, as a young woman, you got onto a very high technology track. How did that happen? When did that happen?
Oh, gosh. Well, I've been pretty much obsessed with Apple and the Mac since I was about 18 months old. There's a picture, no joke, of me sitting at a Mac Plus at my father's Mac Plus with an Apple Writer, you know, printer, drawing little tiny things in Mac Paint with the one button mouse. And I grew up with Apple technology in my house. And but the funny thing is, I was never intending to be a professional writer as a career. I'd wanted to be a novelist when I was young, and I wrote a ton of stuff. But technical writing and writing for any kind of journalism website was not even on my radar. It's sort of a confluence of strange events that got me to the Apple news and the Apple tech world. First of all, I started doing websites very early on, probably when I was 13 or 14. No, I guess the earliest. I know this because I had to look it up earlier. I started designing websites. My first website, I designed at 9 years old. It was a terrible tripod.
Oh my.
Site. Yeah, it's very painful. It's still somewhere on the web, but I will not give anybody the link because it's pretty terrible. It was like a Star Wars fan site. But I bought a domain name when I was 13, which is to say I convinced my dad to buy me a domain name when I was 13, and I started learning how to hand build websites. And I did that probably for 10 years, and even got – I would get little tiny side gigs designing headshot and resume websites for actors in the Los Angeles area. And that's
nice gig.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it didn't pay a whole lot because I was 14, you know, designing websites. So I had no idea what I was supposed to charge. And my websites weren't very complicated. You know, it wasn't database or anything. It was just hard coded HTML. It was, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. But from that, I had sort of this HTML background. I worked pretty much constantly with my Mac and with my computer. And I had sort of this internal knowledge. But my real, like my career goal for a long time was to work in theater and film. And I had trained as an actor and a director and a producer all throughout high school. I went to a conservatory high school for the arts and then went to a really great college called Hampshire, which I like to call a graduate program for undergraduate students, that basically allows you to hyper-focus on topics that you're really, really interested in. And so I trained all throughout my college, my high school and college career, to be a producer and a director, and not so much a writer. I continued to write constantly because I just writing's in my blood, but it was never something where I'm like, this is my eventual career. My big master plan was get a job at the Apple Store to fund my theater productions. So I'm like, I know enough about Apple technology that this seems like a good gig. It's really exciting. I get to work with my favorite computers, and then I have money to do my theater stuff in the evening.
You must know Christina Warren fairly well.
I do know Christina Warren. She's great. And actually, Jessie Char did something very similar. She used to run a company called Pacific Helm, and now she does her own consulting business and does the Layers Conference, which is phenomenal during WWDC week.
It's interesting you should mention her, because both of those people have been suggested to me to have on the show.
So they're wonderful, yeah.
They're coming up.
Great, great ladies.
Do you think there's a novel still in you?
Oh, yeah. I have a couple sitting on the back burner that I work on every so often. I think it's going to be if I'm ever going to do it, it's going to be a 10 to 15 years thing from now, because I just need – in order to finish it, I need like 3 good months and then a team of editors, because editing your own work, you go into a Ouroboros where you're just constantly revising your own first chapter and you never get out of revision hell.
I've always thought about that, but I get so busy technical writing – that I don't know if I'm going to ever do my science fiction novel.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I've done some reading about it, and I've been told that your first novel is both your business card and your getting it out of your system thing.
Oh, of course.
Where you do everything you thought you wanted to do in your first novel, and the publisher says, well, you've proved to us you can at least write, but how would you like to do something that we want you to do, and
yeah,
that we think is really popular. And right. So put all those skills you've got to work here, and we'll do a publishable novel.
Yeah, my secret passion, to be perfectly honest, is middle grade reading, and specifically graphic novels. I love middle grade. I love young adults and children's books. I think there's so much that you can do to build great books for younger women and men of all ages. And the graphic novels in particular, in the last 10, 15 years, we've seen a huge resurgence, which just makes me so, so excited. It's one of many passions. I mean, that's the funny thing is that my life has really been a string of, I want to try this. I want to try that. I want to try, you know, X. I want to try Y. And I get to a certain point and sometimes I say, oh, this is perfect for me. And then I'll get to a certain point and say, hey, you know, I love this, but this is not something that I want to dedicate a career to. And that's what happened with me in theater and producing, where I got to a certain point where I was doing pretty well. And then I had a production basically collapse out from under me, due to a whole host of factors, including it just not being prepared enough and funds. And at that point, I basically realized, you know, I have too much of my heart and soul invested into this for this to be a business. Like it hurts too much when I fall to want to get back up again and to want to do this. So I, you know, in 2009, I essentially went from, I graduated college and said, I'm going to do this full time. And then by the end of 2009, I was convinced that I couldn't make a future in this without wanting to cry and tear all my hair out by the end of it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And that is the moment when I changed to tech, which is, I was feeling very down on myself. This was right after I had kind of made this decision and the production had fallen apart. And I was just sitting in the room that we had rented, feeling very sorry for myself and reading Twitter because I had gotten addicted to it the year prior. And Jason Snell, who I had followed, because
I'm going to stop you right there.
Yeah.
I'm going to stop you right there because we have to take a commercial break.
Okay.
And I had wanted to talk about Jason Snell and Macworld, and that's a perfect transition.
Great.
Okay. So we're going to take a short commercial break, 60 seconds, and we will be right back with Serenity. Stay with us.
Hello there, all you fabulous Background Mode listeners. I'm Kelly Gamont with the Mac Observer, and I just want to say a few words about how you can support all the things we do. If you're thinking about buying something from Apple, Amazon, or Mac Mall, just go to the Mac Observer's homepage where we have a section called Support TMO. Or you can just enter macobserver.com/Apple Store, all one word, and that will take you to our special page for Apple and our other affiliates. If you make a purchase from one of our partners this way, the Mac Observer receives a small compensation for sending business their direction. Pretty cool, right? And you don't pay a penny more. This small fee from our affiliates helps us continue to bring you TMO's daily news, reviews, tips, how-tos, and podcasts like this one. So the next time you're thinking about an online purchase, come to TMO's homepage and support the Mac Observer. Thanks. Back to you, John.
We are back. Thank you, Kelly. All right. So I'm sorry for the interruption.
No.
I want to hear about Macworld and how you got started.
Okay.
Because that's where I first discovered you as a fantastic writer.
Oh, gosh. So Macworld came about largely by accident, where, as I said, I was feeling really down on myself and browsing Twitter and basically being like, I don't know what my career is going to be. And I'm broke because, you know, this production has failed. And I see Jason Snell, who I followed and was a great admirer of, says, hey, you ever dreamed of writing for Macworld? We're looking for freelance writers. Just, you know, email this email.
How did
address.
He know who you were?
He didn't. It was just an open call. It was an open call on Twitter.
Wow.
It was just like a post of – and Macworld, you know, even after I started working there, we would do this occasionally. Like every 2 years, we would look for just new freelancers to you know, fit into the news team or to work on how-tos or reviews. And so I saw this and I emailed the email address immediately, probably, you know, 30 minutes after I saw it. And I'm like, I'd be very interested. And I got an email back a few days later that was, you know, it was a BCC. So it was probably sent to 400, 500 people. And it was here, write two writing samples and of Apple News. Here's one thing and then pick the other that you want to write about. And send it back to us quickly. And so as the second I got that email, I happened to be at my computer. So I wrote 2 news stories under an hour. And I was just like, I'm going to do this. And I'm going to prove that I have quick communications and I can do this quickly. And, you know, everything's, you know, I'm just going to prove that I could be great at this. And I sent it in and felt pretty good about myself and then heard nothing for 5 months.
Wow, that's depressing.
Yeah. I was kind of like, well, you know, I did that, but I was used to theater, right? Where it's like they don't call you back if they're not interested in you. So I'm just like, it's probably just they had a bunch of applicants and they weren't impressed with me. That's cool. So in that time, I moved again back to the town where I had spent my college years. I moved to East Hampton, Massachusetts, and started work back up again at the Apple store. And literally one week, 7 days after I started back up at the Apple store, I got an email that was essentially, hi, sorry it took so long, but we're really interested in having you write for Macworld. When would you be able to start? And this was not a full-time job offer, even a part-time job offer. This was $10 a post. This was, you know, hobby pay, early, you know, test freelancing.
So it didn't conflict with your day job.
Well, yes and no. So from a time perspective, no, it doesn't conflict with my day job. From a resources and proprietary ideas perspective, no one at Apple is going to be too crazy about me writing about an Apple news page while being employed at Apple.
Right.
So I had a decision to make, which is essentially Apple wants to employ me full time and give me full time benefits, and I could continue working for them, or I could drop everything and go work for $10 a post and find myself some odd jobs to support myself.
The decision.
Oh, yes. I talked to my parents about it, and my parents were very concerned. And my father actually sent Chris Breen, formerly of Macworld, he sent Chris Breen an email essentially being like, I know you have a daughter who's into tech. My daughter has just offered to do freelance writing for you. Do you think do you think she should do it? And Chris, bless his heart, wrote back, it was very nice to my dad, and was like, absolutely not. Writing is a terrible field, and so few people make it as good writers. And if she has a steady job for her at Apple, that seems like a much better long-term prospect for her.
Listeners, are you listening to this?
Yeah, Chris Breen had at this point had never seen my writing and had no idea who I was. And he was giving, you know what, fairly legitimate advice.
Of course.
Yeah. But I didn't listen to my father. And essentially I said to him and to my mother, oh, don't worry. They already love me. And there's a job for a full-time positioning opening in 6 months. And I'm totally going to get it. This is just my foot in the door. And I was lying through my teeth because, you know, they barely knew me. I'd exchanged 2 emails with Jason and Dan Morin. Like no one knew who I was.
But you had a dream.
Yeah, well, but I knew I could BS my way into pretty much anything, which is to say, like, I knew I had the skills to be a technical writer. My writing was good, or my writing was solid, and I knew Apple like the back of my hand. And I had just been spending, you know, I had spent 2.5 years at Apple as a creative in their store, which essentially means that I was teaching the one-to-one program. So I was sitting down with people for 50 minutes and helping them learn to use their computer.
There is nothing like teaching customers to learn the technology.
Oh, nothing.
I can vouch for that.
I love it. I mean, it was one of my great joys. And if I hadn't had to do it in a retail store, I probably would have continued to doing it. I love teaching. But When I moved to Macworld and, you know, said sorry to my Apple friends, like, thanks for holding my job for me, I got to quit again because this is an opportunity too good to be true. And everybody understood because they're like, well, yeah, it's Macworld. Macworld has some name recognition. Macworld was Macworld. You know, it had been around forever. So I begged a friend of mine who ran a t-shirt shipping company to go work there for part-time so that I had some extra money. And I did some website work for him. And then I started writing $10 a post at Macworld. And funny enough, 6 months later, they had a job opening in their San Francisco office for an ebook editor. And at the time, I knew nothing about ebooks except that they were a thing. They existed and that Macworld was producing them. And the job wanted so many more things than I was ever qualified for. But I sort of approached it with the same tenacity that I was approaching the articles, which was, you know what? I'm going to apply for this and I'm going to get it because I need to. Like, I am going crazy living in this small town in Massachusetts and I'm 22 and I need to, like, I need to do this. This would be so good for me and I know that I can do a good job at it. Because it was essentially my initial job at Macworld was the job that I was applying for was creating help and how-to super guides, books for users. And I'm like, this is essentially everything I did as a creative just compiled into a book, and it's book editing, which I had been doing on the side basically as I would peer edit friends. This sounds hilarious, but friends fan fiction and like friends short stories. And I had been doing that for years and years. And I had done a little bit of editing at Macworld for other writers. So I was just like, yeah, I can edit a book. I can do this. This is great. And somehow they hired me. I wrote a very, very...
I can kind of see how they felt.
Yeah. Boastful cover letter. I wrote basically a letter, and I think I posted this up on Twitter a couple months ago that was essentially like, you need to hire me for this because this is why I would be awesome at this job. This is what I would bring. This is all of my, you know, I may not have your traditional qualifications. I may not have worked in a newsroom for 5 years, but here's my writing samples. You guys know me. You guys like me. And, you know, I'm willing to work really hard and put together something fantastic.
You are a lot like Glenn Fleischman. I did an interview with him recently, and he was the same kind of guy. Did the same thing with InfoWorld.
Glenn.
Yes, he did.
Oh my gosh. Yep. Glenn is funny. Glenn was one of the first friends that I made in the tech community. And we made friends by him accusing Dan Morin of making me up as a fictional character. He's like, Serenity Caldwell is just Dan Morin's newest pseudonym. This isn't possibly a real person. And I'm like, hi, real person. Thank you. I'm flattered, but
that's
also
funny.
Hi. And we hit it off immediately.
That's very cool.
Yeah, but Glenn's good people. Yeah, so I weaseled my way into Macworld. By working my ass off, by working very hard as a freelancer, and then working very hard in that job, and figuring basically learning how to build ebooks from scratch. At the time, Macworld was just doing PDFs, and we were experimenting with the idea of, oh, well, the iBookstore just opened in 2010. Maybe we should do a book for the iBookstore. Maybe we should learn the EPUB format. And at the time, EPUBs were a disaster, a disaster piece in the making, really. InDesign would let you export HTML files, but then you had to custom compile them, and you would have to go and manually change a bunch of things. You couldn't embed custom fonts, so command signs that we used and the Apple logo that we'd use for the magazine would show up as, ASCII characters and very strange things you'd have to manually find and replace. You'd have to restyle certain sections. It was a slow, exhausting, frustrating process. And one of my great championships of or my really things I'm proud of at Macworld was getting our ebooks modernized, figuring out a good solid path for us to go on with ebooks. And making them pretty, making them something that someone would actually enjoy reading, putting page breaks in, putting really beautiful photos and captions, and not only making the text worthwhile, but making the design that our designers had worked so hard on, figuring out a way to translate that to the EPUB format. And we did it really well. You know, the year we made the most ebooks at Macworld, we did 24 in a year. And I probably edited 18 of those.
It's an amazing story.
Yeah, it was insane. I mean, I was working probably 80, 90 hours a week. I didn't have a life. But I was so proud of what we were doing. And I was so excited. And we got amazing feedback from listeners who was like, this is perfect. You know, this is the kind of thing that I can send to my mom or that I want to keep on hand for my own purposes. And it taught me a lot. You know, I was taking HTML and CSS knowledge that I had, you know, growing up and building websites. And then I was putting it into an entirely new format. And eventually, you know, we were shipping books on multiple stores. We were shipping it on the iBookstore. We were shipping it on the Kindle store. We were doing stuff in PDF for Zinio. We were all over the place. We were doing stuff for Nook. We were experimenting with iBooks Author. We were experimenting with, new programs. There was a guy who approached me at Macworld Expo a couple of years ago who eventually was part of a two-man team who created the ebook program Vellum, which is a wonderful program for people WYSIWYG program for people who want to build ebooks but don't want to touch code at all. It's just I made so many good connections through that and learned so much about the publishing industry, and that led to me doing some teaching work at Emerson, which is what I'm doing this semester, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, you mentioned the other day that you were teaching. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, so this is my first semester doing it, and I'm terrified, and I goof up every class, and I learn things every class. But I got invited due to a friend of a colleague, essentially, someone who worked at IDG but for a different magazine, was teaching Introduction to Digital Publishing at Emerson College and invited me as a guest speaker. After I guest spoke, was like, so I'm not going to do this class next semester because I have some things. Would you like to take it over? And I'm like, are you serious? Really? Yes, I would love to teach. That's, you know, it's been my dream for years and years. And it was, you know, what I'm teaching is essentially a compilation of everything that I've had to learn in the last 6-7 years, as well as all of my, you know, my nearly 20 years of HTML and CSS knowledge. And it's crazy to me. It's crazy. Like, that's that all these little things that I've picked up along the way, all these little disassociated skills that, you know, are only tangentially related to the stuff that I'm getting paid for, led to the moment where I get to, you know, I get to teach graduate students the world, the wide, wonderful, crazy world of digital publishing.
Like, this is a common thread from the people I've interviewed, is this building, this getting excited and delving into something, and then this leads to that, and then that leads to that, and then there's this pyramid, a sort of a foundation that just keeps growing and growing and growing, and then opportunities arise, and then new skills, and it's just this fantastic loop of acquiring skills with passion, and then moving into something else, and then something leads to something great, and then there you are.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Oh, it's wonderful. I really love my job, and I love being, like, I think being passionate is probably the most important thing that, if you want to be in any industry, being passionate and having a passion for what you're doing and having a never-ending desire to learn, I think is the biggest thing that you can possibly do.
Well said. Well, we only have a couple of minutes left, and I want to ask you for the final topic about the iPad Pro.
Sure.
I was a big fan of the concept. I pushed it. I wrote about it. I thought there were great opportunities for the iPad Pro in the market. And I know from our previous discussions that you have one and a pencil. Tell me what you think about the product and Apple's decision to make it and the opportunities and everything you can tell us about your feelings about the iPad Pro.
Oh, gosh. Okay, so first of all...
In 3 minutes.
Okay, in 3 minutes or less. Okay. First of all, I love the iPad Pro. This is the best iPad I've ever owned. I bought the first iPad thinking that it was going to do what the iPad Pro eventually did for me, which was get me reinvigorated in digital drawing again. I owned all sorts of crazy things. I owned, Wacom tablets pretty much nonstop since age 12, because drawing has also been a big passion of mine. And ever since the first iPad came out, I'm like, oh my God, it's an Apple version of a Wacom tablet. It will work. And then I discovered that it wasn't pressure sensitive. And even there were styluses. I became like the top stylus reviewer in the tech industry for a while because I was the only person looking at all of the different styluses available for the iPad. But stylus after stylus after stylus is just – these things were good and they were getting better, but they weren't. They couldn't hold a candle to what Wacom was doing. And then Apple came out with the iPad Pro and the Pencil, and it was basically laying the gauntlet down and saying, here, we're going to reinvent all the 20-year-old technology that you've been sitting stagnant on, Wacom. And we're going to do it with a little bit of flair and panache and Apple, you know, effervescence. And I love the Pencil. It's one of my favorite digital drawing tools that's ever been invented. It's so much fun to draw. It feels so natural in your hand, and it feels like writing on paper in a way that no other digital tool I've ever had does. It's not, you know, the iPad Pro is still software limited in that the software is not quite there yet for fully professional work, but for starting, for being a sketchbook and for being a starting area that you could then transfer to a Mac, apps like AstroPad let you use it as a Wacom Cintiq, like a second monitor, so you can draw directly on your iPad Pro for a document that you have open in Photoshop, and you can do it wirelessly, which is really crazy. There's so much potential with there. I love it.
This is great stuff. I love mine, especially with regard to magazines.
Oh, yeah.
I had to give up the idea of digital magazines on a 9.7-inch screen, but with this iPad Pro, It's perfect for digital magazines now.
Oh, yeah. No question.
This has been terrific. I wish we could go on, but unfortunately, we are out of time.
Isn't that always the way?
That's always happens. I want to thank you so much for being on the show. This has been a fascinating story. Thank you so much for sharing with the listeners. And listeners, thank you for coming by. I hope you enjoyed the show. And we'll see you next time on the Mac Observer's Background Mode.